Christine Robinson is a 22-year-old woman you are seeing in the emergency department for fever and back pain. 2 weeks ago, she was treated for a kidney infection, and she thought she was all better, but now describes a different type of back pain that gets worse when she brings her right knee up to her chest when she's practicing yoga. She thinks she has another fever too, but says her previous urinary symptoms remain all resolved. On her exam, her temperature is 100.5 Fahrenheit and her pain is reproduced when you flex her right hip, but she doesn't have costovertebral angle tenderness. She asks if this is another kidney infection and if the previous antibiotics didn't work. As you consider your response, you wonder, what could be the cause of her new back pain? And why does her pain get worse when she flexes her hip? Consider your answers as we begin this next episode. Welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Adam Weinstein, bringing anatomy from our bricks to your ears. Let's get started. After completing this section, you will be able to 1. Describe the muscles of the posterior abdominal wall, including the psoas major and quadratus lumborum. 2. Describe the vasculature and lymphatics of the posterior abdominal wall, including the aorta and its branches, and the inferior vena cava and its tributaries. 3. Describe the nerve supply of the posterior abdominal wall, including the sympathetic chain and lumbar plexus. And 4. Describe the relationship of the kidneys in the retroperitoneal space in relation to the posterior abdominal wall anatomy. Part 1. Why is the posterior abdominal wall important? It might not be the flashiest sounding anatomical structure, but if you want to stand upright and keep your retroperitoneal organs like your kidneys in place, the posterior abdominal wall is pretty important. Located at the back of the body, bounded by the lateral abdominal walls and the posterior parietal peritoneum, the posterior abdominal wall provides structural support for the body and for the organs of the retroperitoneal space. It also provides the blood supply and venous drainage to the lower extremities and the abdominal organs. Part 2. What forms the bed of the posterior abdominal wall? The posterior abdominal wall extends from the 12th rib superiorly to the sacrum and iliac crests inferiorly. It acts as a bed that supports the rest of the abdominal wall and also the organs in the retroperitoneum. The retroperitoneum is the region of the abdominal cavity that lies posterior to the peritoneum or the peritoneal cavity. It contains organs like the adrenal glands and the kidneys. The bed of the posterior abdominal wall consists of the spinal column and two main muscles, the psoas major and the quadratus lumborum. The psoas major is immediately adjacent to the lumbar vertebrae, L1 through L4, and is the most medial of the posterior abdominal wall muscles. It has its origin on the transverse processes of the T12 through L4 vertebrae, and it inserts in the lesser trochanter of the femur. Therefore, its main action is flexion and external rotation at the hip, and so it plays a major role in walking. Thinking back to our patient, Christine Robinson, I wonder if this psoas major muscle may somehow be related to our symptoms, since her pain is aggravated by flexion of the hip. Now, the quadratus lumborum is lateral to the psoas major. It has its origin on the wings of the ilium, and it inserts on the transverse processes of the L1 through L4 vertebrae and the posterior border of the 12th rib. Its main function is to fix and stabilize the 12th rib and diaphragm during inspiration. It supports the core of the body when breathing. It also can help stabilize the pelvis when standing upright. Question break. Can you name the structures of the bed of the posterior abdominal wall starting from the midline and moving outward? The spinal column, specifically from lumbar vertebrae L1 through L4, represents the midline of the bed. Just lateral to that is the psoas major muscle, and lateral to that is the quadratus lumborum muscle. Part 3. What forms the roof of the posterior abdominal wall? The diaphragm is the most superior part of the posterior abdominal wall and forms a roof over the wall. The diaphragm is a muscle, and when we inhale, it contracts and is drawn inferiorly into the abdominal cavity. As a reminder, it is innervated by the phrenic nerve, which has roots C3 through C5, as well as intercostal nerves. Part 4. What major arteries are in the posterior abdominal wall? The abdominal aorta is the central artery in the posterior abdominal wall. It enters posterior to the diaphragm at T12, travels downward just to the level of the spine, and descends to the level of L4, where the aorta bifurcates into the right and left common iliac arteries. As the aorta traverses this path downward, it has many branches that supply blood to the gastrointestinal tract, the kidneys, and the gonads. One strategy to remember all of these branches is to group them into the unpaired branches and the paired branches. The unpaired branches supply the gastrointestinal viscera and arise from the anterior surface of the aorta. Discussing these arteries in a cranial to caudal fashion, that is, head to tail, the celiac trunk is the first branch. It supplies blood to the embryonic foregut derivatives, including the esophagus, all the way down to the proximal duodenum. Additional organs supplied by the celiac trunk include the gallbladder, liver, pancreas, and spleen. The next branch is the superior mesenteric artery. This artery supplies midgut derivatives, which includes the distal duodenum to the proximal two-thirds of the transverse portion of the colon. The next unpaired branch is the inferior mesenteric artery. This artery supplies hindgut derivatives, which includes the distal third of the transverse colon, to the upper portion of the rectum. Of note, the median sacral artery is also an unpaired branch of the aorta and is the most caudal branch. It is often thought of separately from these other three unpaired branches since it does not supply the gastrointestinal tract. Next to discuss are the paired branches of the aorta. Most of these arise from the posterolateral surfaces of the aorta. Discussing them from a cranial to caudal fashion, or from head to toe, these include the inferior phrenic arteries, suprarenal arteries, renal arteries, and the lumbar arteries. Lastly, the testicular and ovarian arteries, or collectively known as the gonadal arteries, are also paired arteries. However, unlike the others just mentioned, they rise anteriorly from the aorta. They typically branch off just caudally to the renal artery branches. There are also some clinically important arterial anastomoses between the branches of the abdominal aorta. These are important because if there were a blockage in one artery, these connections between the arteries may allow collateral circulation to pass through the site of the blockage. For example, at the T12 level, the celiac artery will anastomose with the superior mesenteric artery via the pancreaticoduodenal arteries. Another example is at the L1 to L3 level, the superior and inferior mesenteric arteries anastomose via the marginal artery. Part 5. How do the tributaries of the inferior vena cava compare with the branches of the abdominal aorta? The inferior vena cava, or IVC, is the great vein that travels through the posterior abdominal wall. It carries most of the blood from below the diaphragm up to the heart. The IVC begins caudally, where the common iliac veins join together. It travels up along the right side of the body, adjacent to the aorta, on the left, ultimately piercing the diaphragm at the T8 vertebral level, and eventually draining into the right atrium of the heart. The tributaries of the IVC in the posterior abdominal wall largely mirror the branches of the aorta that we just discussed. There are two main differences. First, while the GI tract is directly supplied with blood from the aorta via the unpaired arteries, venous blood must first pass through the liver via a single portal vein before draining into the IVC via hepatic veins. And second, the left suprarenal and gonadal veins drain first into the left renal vein rather than directly into the IVC. Whereas like the branches of the aorta, the paired tributaries of the IVC include the inferior phrenic vein, the suprarenal veins, except the left suprarenal vein, which drains into the left renal vein first, the renal veins, the gonadal veins, again recalling that the left gonadal vein drains into the left renal vein first, and the lumbar veins. Again, similar to the aorta, the median sacral vein is the most caudal tributary of the IVC. Lastly, there are also a number of venous anastomoses that permit venous return to the heart, or one of the tributaries to the IVC to become blocked. Importantly, an additional feature of the posterior abdominal venous system are the three clinically relevant portosystemic anastomoses, which are connections between the portal venous system, which drains into the liver, and the systemic venous circulation, which drains into the right atrium of the heart. These anastomoses are important because in hepatic cirrhosis, they may become engorged and prone to bleeding. The first is by the esophagus, where there is an anastomosis between esophageal branches of the left gastric vein, part of the portal system, and the esophageal branches of the systemic circulation's venous drainage. As just discussed, when portal pressures increase, this anastomosis may lead to bleeding esophageal varices. The second is located near the umbilicus, which has an anastomosis between the paraumbilical vein, part of the portal system, and the small or superficial epigastric veins of the anterior abdominal wall, part of the systemic drainage. When portal pressures increase, a skin finding called caput medusae may form. Caput medusae represents the distended and engorged superficial epigastric veins radiating from the umbilicus and resembling the snakes of the head of Medusa. The third portosystemic anastomosis is near the rectum, which has an anastomosis between the superior rectal vein, part of the portal system, and the middle and inferior rectal veins, part of the systemic drainage. Here, during high portal pressures, rectal varices may form, leading to rectal bleeding. Now for a question break. Why are varicoceles, which are dilated veins of the pampiniform plexus in the scrotum, more common in the left testis than the right? Varicoceles are more often on the left side than the right side because the left testicular vein drains into the left renal vein rather than directly into the IVC. And so there is a greater potential for resistance on the left side compared with the right testicular vein, which drains directly into the inferior vena cava. Varicoceles are the most common cause of scrotal enlargement in adult males. They represent the dilated veins of the pampiniform plexus in the scrotum and make an enlarged testis feel like a bag of worms. The plexus can become dilated due to increased venous pressure or resistance to drainage. Part 6. What are the lymphatics in the posterior abdominal wall? In addition to blood flow in and out of the abdomen, there are also numerous lymphatic channels that reside in the posterior abdominal wall. Their primary responsibility is the lymphatic drainage of the abdominal organs. The main lymphatics, cranial to caudal, are the inferior phrenic nodes, the celiac, the superior mesenteric, and inferior mesenteric nodes, and most inferiorly, the lumbar nodes, also known as lateral aortic nodes. These lymphatics drain through lumbar and intestinal trunks up into the cisterna chyli, which is a sac at the lower end of the thoracic duct. Okay, now that we've talked about lymphatic drainage of the visceral organs, how do you think the soft tissues of the posterior abdominal wall get their lymphatic drainage? Well, it's a combination of pathways. The muscles in the bed of the posterior abdominal wall drain to the retroaortic and lateral aortic lymph nodes, whereas each side of the upper or superior half of the posterior abdominal wall drains all the way up to the axillary lymphatics of the same side. Part 7. What nerves are in the posterior abdominal wall? Now that we've talked about arteries, veins, and lymphatics, let's move on to the nerve supply. The posterior abdominal wall's nerves include the sympathetic chain and the lumbar plexus. The sympathetic chain is a paravertebral ganglia. It contains preganglionic visceral efferent and afferent fibers that supply the abdominal organs. The lumbar plexus lies anterior to the transverse processes of the lumbar vertebra within the psoas muscle. It contains the ventral rami of spinal nerves from roots L1 through L4. The lumbar plexus gives rise to 6 main branches. These nerves can be remembered superior to inferior by the mnemonic I squared golf often. I squared represents the iliohypogastric and ilioinguinal nerves. Golf has a lowercase o and stands for the genitofemoral, lateral femoral cutaneous, and femoral nerves. The mnemonic ends with often with a capital O, representing the obturator nerve. Describing these nerves anatomically, the first three of these branches arise from the L1 and L2 nerve roots. The iliohypogastric nerve is first and originates at the level of L1. It provides motor function to the internal oblique and transverse abdominal muscles and sensory function to just above the pubis and the posterior lateral buttocks. The next branch is the ilioinguinal nerve, also at the L1 level. This nerve provides sensory innervation to the inguinal region in the superior and medial portion of the thigh. Moving downward, the first letter in golf, genitofemoral nerve, is the next branch, and it arises from the level of L1 and L2. It has a genital branch that supplies the cremaster muscle, and a femoral branch that supplies sensation to the area of the femoral triangle. The next three branches arise from nerve roots L2 through L4. These branches include the lateral femoral cutaneous nerve, which arises from roots L2 and L3 and supplies sensory innervation to the anterior lateral thigh. Next is the femoral nerve, which ends the word golf, arising from roots L2 through L4. This nerve innervates muscles of the anterior thigh. And the last branch is the O, the obturator nerve, originating from roots L2 through L4. And innervating muscles of the medial thigh for adduction. The following is a clinical correlation and question that relates to the lumbar plexus. The cremaster reflex is elicited by lightly stroking the superior and medial portion of the patient's thigh in an inferior direction. In a normal response, the cremaster muscle pulls up on the scrotum and testis on the side that was stroked. Which two nerves of the lumbar plexus are required for this reflex? The cremaster muscle is supplied by the genital branch of the genitofemoral nerve. It's what pulls up the scrotum and testis on the side that was stroked. This reflex also requires the ilioinguinal nerve, which supplies the sensory innervation to this region of the thigh. If the ilioinguinal nerve were cut accidentally during an inguinal hernia repair, the cremaster reflex could be absent. The reflex may also be absent and is an important clinical diagnostic finding in cases of testicular torsion. Part 8. How are the kidneys positioned related to the posterior abdominal wall space? The kidneys are located in the retroperitoneal space, anteriorly to and resting against the bed of the posterior abdominal wall, and span from about the T12 to the L3 level. Therefore, the kidneys rest against the psoas major and quadratus lumborum muscles. Such proximity to the psoas major is interesting, as it reminds me again of our patient, Christine Robinson. She was treated for a kidney infection, right? So could her psoas major muscle possibly have been affected? Getting back to the kidney's anatomic positioning, it's helpful to keep in mind that the right kidney lies slightly lower than the left kidney because of the large space occupied by the liver on the right side. Structures surrounding and in close proximity to the right kidney include the liver superiorly and medially, the duodenum medially, and the ascending colon inferiorly. Structures surrounding and in close proximity to the left kidney include the stomach superiorly and medially, the spleen superiorly and laterally, the pancreas medially, and the descending colon inferiorly. The kidneys are supplied with blood by the renal arteries and are drained by the renal veins. Their lymphatics drain to the lumbar nodes. The kidney's innervation is supplied by the autonomic nervous system's renal plexus, whose fibers course along the renal arteries to reach each kidney. Preganglionic sympathetic fibers are from splanchnic nerves, and when activated, result in vasoconstriction, reducing renal blood flow. Input from the parasympathetic nervous system is from the vagus nerve and results in the opposite effect. Pain afferents from the renal pelvis travel in the same splanchnic nerves up to the T10 to T11 levels of the spinal cord. Renal pain may be sensed in the corresponding T10 to T11 dermatomes, leading to the type of referred pain that patients describe in the costovertebral angle as with kidney stones. And that's all I have today for the anatomy of the posterior abdominal wall. Let's see if we've completed our goals for this episode. First, can you describe the location of the three main muscles that contribute to the posterior abdominal wall? The muscles of the posterior abdominal wall include the psoas major and quadratus lumborum. They form the bed of the posterior abdominal wall. The diaphragm is a muscle as well, and it forms the roof of the posterior abdominal wall. Next, can you describe the path and branches of the aorta as it travels through the posterior abdominal wall? The aorta passes down through the diaphragm into the posterior abdominal wall at the T12 level and has a series of branches, including unpaired branches feeding the gastrointestinal organs and paired branches supplying the diaphragm, adrenal glands, kidneys, gonads, and soft tissue. Next, can you describe the path and tributaries of the inferior vena cava as it travels through the posterior abdominal wall? The inferior vena cava passes through on the right side of the posterior abdominal wall and exits through the diaphragm at the level of T8. The tributaries of the IVC mirror the tributaries of the aorta, with two exceptions, being the portal venous system, which is in charge of draining the gastrointestinal blood into the liver, and the left gonadal and suprarenal veins, which first drain into the left renal vein rather than directly into the IVC. Now, can you describe the nerves that originate and pass through the posterior abdominal wall? The posterior abdominal wall's nerves include the sympathetic chain and the lumbar plexus. The lumbar plexus gives rise to six main branches, which can be remembered superior to inferior by the mnemonic I squared golf often. Representing the iliohypogastric and ilioinguinal nerves, I squared, the genitofemoral, lateral femoral cutaneous, and femoral nerves, golf, and lastly, the obturator nerve, often. Finally, can you describe the relationship of the kidneys in the retroperitoneal space as it relates to the posterior abdominal wall anatomy? The kidneys are retroperitoneal organs lying at the T12 through L3 spinal levels. They lie anterior to the psoas and quadratus lumborum muscles. The right and left kidneys, respectively, lie inferior to the liver and spleen, lateral to the duodenum and pancreas, and superior to the ascending and descending colon. And that's it for the anatomy of the posterior abdominal wall. With your newfound knowledge, let's revisit our patient from earlier. Thinking back to your patient, Christine Robinson, who after being treated for a kidney infection presents with a different type of back pain, which gets worse when she brings her right knee up to her chest. Her pain is associated with a recurrent fever, but without recurrent urinary symptoms. You consider, what could be the cause of her new back pain, and why does it get worse when she flexes her hip? You wonder if her kidney infection could have impacted adjacent tissues in the posterior abdominal wall, and specifically the psoas major muscle, given that she develops pain with flexion of the hip. You obtain a CT scan of the abdomen, which confirms a psoas major muscle abscess. Mrs. Robinson wonders how this happened, despite her taking her antibiotics as prescribed. You explain that the psoas major muscle lies behind the kidney, and before she started the antibiotics, the infection must have spread to this muscle and formed into an abscess. An abscess is a walled-off infection that is harder to treat and generally needs a longer course of antibiotics and sometimes additional treatments. You reassure her this is still treatable and she should be able to exercise and stretch without pain again once it is fully healed. And that's all I have for the posterior abdominal wall. Thanks for joining me. If you like this episode, give it a thumbs up or a comment. You can enjoy the full BRIC experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. Be well!